Abbott Blessings again. It is July 22nd, 2023, Sabbath day. And we are in chapter 7 of the book of Acts, if you have your Bibles open, please. I'm going to jump back to one chapter, just the last two verses of Acts chapter 6, verse 14 and 15, because it kind of, you need to understand it. Well, just to put it all back in context as to what, you know, is going to be said here in chapter 7 when Stephen starts to speak and defend himself. And so verses 14 and 15 of, if you want. Oh, okay. All right. So, yeah, but verses 14 and 15 says, "For we have heard him say," that, and they're talking about Stephen, and false witness, of course. And they said that, "We have heard him say that this Jesus of Nazareth shall bestow this place, I'm sorry, shall destroy this place, and shall change the customs which Moses delivered us. And all that sat in council looked steadfastly on him, saw his face as it had been the face of an angel." How's the volume, by the way? Is it too low? Because I'm looking at the VU on it. It looks okay. I'm crossing the threshold of 12 decibels and just about clipping, so it should be okay. It's good? Okay, thanks, brother. All right, so let's jump over to chapter 7. And as we know, this is Stephen's, well, the first 50 verses. It's going to be Stephen's defense. And then, of course, he reproves the Jews for the death of Christ in verses 51 to 53. And, of course, they kill him for that. And so, this is what it says. Acts chapter 7, verse 1 is where I'm going to start. And it says, "Then said the high priest, are these things so?" You know, after what they just said. That's why I had to read the last two verses of the previous chapter, because, you know, got to get the context. And so verse 2 says, "And he said, men and brethren and fathers," I'm sorry, "men, brethren, and fathers, hearken. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he dwelt in Charan." Now, Stephen now, before going further in verse 3, Stephen now proves their accusations of blasphemy against him are false, as he glorifies God in this mini sermon that he's about to give. You know, I can't find reference that Abraham was in Mesopotamia, but the Bible's true, and that's all I need. Because if it doesn't mention it in the Old, it's going to be there in somewhere in the Newer or wherever. But especially since verse 3 says it was thy country, as we'll read here in a moment. Plus, I do find Bible reference that he did go to Haran, which in the New Testament is called Sharon or Karen or whatever I called it. You know, the Sharon thing, but because that's there in Genesis 11. But so he had to be someplace prior. His residence in Mesopotamia may have been, you know, common knowledge among the Jews for Stephen to have mentioned it in the way that he did. But I mean, especially since the Holy Spirit was now speaking through him in his final discourse, like his, like a deathbed kind of a thing, because it leads to his martyrdom. And so I see this as absolute truth, but then again, every verse is. So, but, you know, and I like to mention that because you cover all the bases, because, you know, sometimes you're talking to an atheist and they're going to harp on that one fact about Mesopotamia. And, plus one can't ignore the sermon that Stephen is about to share, in that, it proves beyond all doubt that he is not a blasphemer as they claimed. He is openly murdered before the eyes of all that day as an innocent follower of Jesus Christ. And his death is the end result of those that knew the truth he spoke could not be refuted. Their only recourse was to just go in a rage and kill him. You know, it's just, and that's today's world too, you know. Anyway, verse 3 says, and like after talking about the Lord glorifying himself before Abraham, and he says, "Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and come into the land which I will show thee." And that's, you know, Genesis 12:1, obviously. But But Acts chapter 7 verse 4 says, then came he out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Charan, I guess that's a better pronouncement. And from thence, or Haran, as it says in the Old Testament, and when his father was dead, he removed him into this land wherein ye now dwell. And his father was Terah, because that's Genesis 11:27 says, now these are the generations of Terah. And then it says, Terah begat Abram. And then it goes on, you know, for the rest. But yeah, it's just common knowledge. Like with cross-referencing, you're going to find that easily in the scriptures. So, but anyway, Acts chapter 7, verse 5 says, and he gave him none inheritance in it, no, not so much as to set his foot on. Yet he promised that he would give it to him for a possession and to his seed after him, when as yet he had no child. You know, the Lord, this is just amazing. And this is one of the reasons I like prophecy and stuff, even though Abram, and who later becomes Abraham, doesn't really see any of this happening in his lifetime, other than, you know, the birth of his son. But the Lord did promise to give Abram this land as an inheritance for his children, even though, like, at the time he was childless, like, you know, Luke just said here, or well, actually, Stephen is saying it, but Luke is transcribing it in the book of Acts. And so, but, you know, this is not to mention the fact that at present, he was not given even so much as a plot of land as big as his footprint. And so trusting our Father is important, since we seldom know how he plans to fulfill his promise. It could be fast, it could be slow. I mean, Genesis 12:7, it says, and the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. So he was pretty well, you know, convinced. You know, he didn't have any issues there with his faith. But I think that is amazing. Father Abraham, you know, as they say. But the prophetic whisper here is we can see how this promise to give Abraham that he never really sees in his mortal life is in the same way that we look upon our heavenly home today, because the Lord told us he's building us mansions. And so, yeah, we don't see it, but we believe it. And that settles it. And so verse 6 says, and God spake on this wise, that his seed should sojourn in a strange land, and that they should bring them into bondage and entreat them evil 400 years. And so, you know, so like we know the Lord prophesied regarding the Jews, you know, the 400 years in bondage in Egypt. But they were actually in Egypt, if you count Jacob and the 12 sons, 440 years, but the first 40 years, good stuff, you know. You know, Joseph was governor. Everything was going good until Joseph died. But yeah, this is an echo. All we see Stephen doing here is echoing that which was written in Genesis. So, and then verse 7 says, and the nation to whom they shall be in bondage will I judge, said God. And after that, they shall come forth and serve me in this place. They were in bondage, as we know, in Egypt. And, until Joseph, they were there until Joseph died, and then 400 years after that in bondage for the 400 years. But, verse 8 says, and he gave him the covenant of circumcision. And so Abraham begat Isaac and circumcised him in the eighth day, and Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat the 12 patriarchs. And now verse 9 says, and the patriarchs moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt, but God was with him. And I kind of like to go, I'm going to jump around in Genesis, I guess, because I just think that's a good place to be, to get the verification that these are echoes of that which is already written. And he's just declaring what he's already studied up as a young Jewish man. And so Genesis 37 verses 27 and 28, that's Genesis 37, 27, 28 says, come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. You know, talking about Joseph. And let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh. And his brethren were content. Then there passed by Midianites, merchantmen. And they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph into Egypt. You know, divine intervention, but they had no clue that's what was happening. Even though Joseph did have those dreams, they didn't decipher them. They didn't understand them. They understood them later. And I'm sure of that. And so, and then verse 10 says, and he delivered him out of all his afflictions and gave him favor and wisdom in the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he made him governor over Egypt and his house. And then you see that in Psalm 22, verse 24. And I'll be in Genesis 45 in a minute after that. But Psalm 22:24 says, for he hath not despised, nor abhorred the affliction of the afflicted. Neither hath he hid his face from him, but when he cried unto him, he heard. And so this is a prayer we're going to be praying in the coming days as well, because we're going to be, you know, our own family members are going to turn some of us in. I mean, Jesus even stated, you know, that enemies will be of our own house. We know this. And then, if for those of you that have a hard time believing it, do a little research as to what happened when the Nazis started going, you know, from town to town. They're all the children. Some of the children were turning in their own parents because they were so scared, and vice versa. You know, they were turning in their Jewish neighbors and loved ones and friends that they grew up with and stuff. They were turning them in because they were so scared. But yeah, some of the own family members would do it too, because they were helping the Jews or something. I don't know. But Genesis 45 verses 8 and 9 says, so now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. You know, like when Joseph's telling his brothers, because they are all scared, because now they realize Joseph's governor. He can kill us now. So he's more or less, obviously, Joseph probably understood the dream. I would have to say absolutely understood the dream by now, because he's literally saying that now it was not of you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh, and Lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Haste ye, and go up to my father, and say unto him, thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not. And so think about this, brothers and sisters. When we have a major trial, or a big attack on us, or we're during the loud cry, and we're seeing some very, very intensely evil things pointed at us, if you will, even being accused of things we never did, because we know that's par for the course for Satan. Just look at the way the left's attacking the right today, even though they're both corrupt, but the left always accused the right of doing the things that the left's actually doing. And that's always worked for them, and everybody always knows that's what they're doing. But that's what the wicked people will do. They'll do the evil act and then blame someone else for the act. I mean, look what Nero did. And then Hitler did the exact same thing by following his example with the Reichstag building, blaming it that was burned down by the Jews. You know, just like Nero blamed his building from being burned down by the Christians. It just followed his lead. But some of us to this day do see the favor of God upon us quite often. I saw it in many scary ways, as well as in a courtroom where a hanging judge literally found favor on me and literally dropped the gavel, said case dismissed, and he even denied, you know, he says, don't even pay the fine. Gone, everything. And it was just amazing to see, because some judges, some magistrates, if you will, like they call them in the scriptures, are going to have that eye. They're going to, because they're ordained. Romans 13 verses 1 to 7 is proof of that. And so they're ordained to be there, just like the police are ordained to be where they're at. And some of these guys take their ordination seriously. And that man had wisdom that day, even though his name was Lynch. We joked about calling a hanging judge because his name was Lynch. And he was really putting people behind bars. And I was sitting there the whole day in that courtroom and watching a lot of people going to jail. And when he got to me, he just drop the gavel, because I'm the last one to get called up, because my last name starts with a P, and they do everything alphabetically in courtrooms, you know. And so I was the last guy there, and I sat and watched all that stuff, and just praying and praying and praying, trusting the Lord on it. And sure enough, the Lord stepped in a big way. And so don't think that when it's scary things happening, or just think about, you know, how beautiful the trial actually is, and always look for the escape. You know, the escape sometimes is just the peace of Jesus that calms your heart. You know, 1 Corinthians 10:13 is clear. You know, we're not tempted above our ability to handle it. And on top of that, the devil is forced into giving us an easy way out. There's always going to be an easy way out. And the easiest way that I can think of is the peace of Christ. Like, yeah, it's not going to bother you. Because the devil likes to attack to stress you out or whatever. You know, there's all sorts of reasons. You know, they'll belittle your faith and make you feel down. But no, trust Jesus, especially in these last days. Okay, verse 11. And then I'm going to jump to chapter 41 of Genesis, verses 54 to 57. But verse 11 here in Acts 7 says, "Now there came a dearth over all the land of Egypt and Canaan, and great affliction, and our fathers found no sustenance." And then he's echoing Genesis 41, verses 54 to 57. It says, "And the 7 years of dearth began to come, according as Joseph had said, and the dearth was in all the lands," or in all lands, "but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, Go unto Joseph, what he saith to you, do. And the famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians, and the famine waxed sore in the land, and all the countries came into Egypt to Joseph to buy corn, because that the famine was so sore in all the lands." And you can see divine intervention here. This is how Joseph is going to see his brothers. This is how the people are, all of the tribes of Israel are going to literally be in Egypt, just like the Lord told Abraham at the start of this mini sermon that Stephen's sharing with the Pharisees that are about to kill him. And so verse 12 says, "But when Jacob heard that there was corn in Egypt, he sent out our fathers first," you know, the 11 brothers that were left, because they claimed that Joseph was killed by a wild animal. And so now if we go to Genesis 42, verses 1 to 3, Genesis 42, 1 to 3 says, "Now when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said unto his sons, Why do you look one upon another? And he said, Behold, I have heard that there is corn in Egypt. Get you down hither and buy for us from thence, that we may live and not die. And Joseph's 10 brethren went down to Egypt to buy corn." The little guy didn't go. Benjamin didn't go, obviously. And so verse 13 says, "And at the second time Joseph was made known to his brethren, and Joseph's kindred was made known unto Pharaoh." And then that's Genesis 45, verses 1 and 2, or even 45, verse 16, but I'll read 1 and 2 first. It says, "Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, cause every man to go," and he said, cried, he yelled out, Morris shouted, "cause every man to go out for me. And there stood no man with him, while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard." And then verse 16 in that chapter says, "And the fame thereof was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, Joseph's brethren are come. And it pleased Pharaoh well and his servants." Because they trusted Joseph, hands down. Because we all know about the dream that Pharaoh had and how Joseph was able to decipher it. Because he was obedient. The only way to understand prophecy, or even doctrine for that matter, is to obey the guy who wrote it. And Joseph was one that obeyed. Okay, verse 14 says, and then I'm going to go to verses 9 and 10 of Genesis 45. So Acts 7, 14 says, "Then Joseph, they then sent Joseph and called his father Jacob to him and all his kindred, 75 souls." So they had kids, obviously. And then Genesis 45, 9 to 10 says, "Haste ye and go up to my father and say unto him, Thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not. And thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen. And thou shalt bear, and thou shalt be near unto me, thou and thy children, and thy children's children, and thy flocks, and thy herds, and all that thou hast." Now think about this. This wasn't going to be an easy row to hoe for his 10 brothers. Because they had to go back and tell their father, they had been lying to him for all those years, that Joseph wasn't dead. You know, and that had to bring all sorts of joy to his dad's heart at the same time. But at the same time, you know, the intervention, the obvious reasons I mean, they would eventually figure out as to why it all had to go down that way anyway. And I'm sure the dreams were brought up, where the dream showed that Joseph, they would bow before Joseph in the dream. It was shown that. Okay, so Jacob, now verse 15 says, no, Jacob went down into Egypt and died, he and our fathers. And of course, that was Genesis 49:33. And it says, and when Jacob had made an end of commanding his sons, he gathered up his feet into the bed, and he yielded up the ghost and was gathered unto his people. And then verse 16 says, in verse 16 and 17 rather, it says, because I don't have anything on this one, it's just because they kind of go together. It says, and were carried over unto Shechem. You know, yeah, they were carried over unto Shechem and laid in the sepulchre that Abraham bought for a sum of money of the sons of Amor, the father of Shechem. But when the time of the promise drew nigh, which God sworn to Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt. And that's Genesis 15, verses, you know, 13 to 16. That's, you know, the prophecy that the Lord told Abram before he changed his name. He said, 15, verses 13 to 16, it says, and he said unto Abram, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them. And they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterwards shall they come out with great substance. And thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace, thou shalt be buried in a good old age, but in the fourth generation they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. And then Psalms 105, verses 24 and 25 says, and he increased his people greatly, and made them stronger than their enemies. He turned their heart to hate his people, to deal subtlety with his servants. You know, they needed the spanking, while at the same time they needed the growth. You know, so it's all divine, you know, intervention. It's all part of the Lord's plan. And then verse 18 says, till another king arose, which knew not Joseph. And that's Exodus 1:8. Gets more or less, he just echoed it almost word for word, you know, because it says, now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. Okay, and then verse 19 says, the same dealt subtlety with our kindred, and evil entreaties, and evil entreated our fathers, so that they cast out their young children to the end they might not live. And then Exodus 1:11 says, therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramses. And then Exodus 1:16 says, and he said unto them, he said, when you do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women and see them upon the stools, if it be a son, then you shall kill him, but if it be a daughter, then you shall live. And so that's what Stephen's getting at here. You know, they cast out their young children to the end they might not live. In other words, they won't live to the end of their, you know, scheduled lifespan, if you will. And so Satan obviously knew Moses was to be born at that time, and so, yeah, he sought to kill him. It's the same thing that happened when Jesus was born and Satan got into Herod and killed all the babies and, you know, the young boys from 2 years old and under in Bethlehem. And that's why there's so many abortions today, because Christ is coming back. So it's just silliness, with, you know, because it's all those kids are going to get up again. But, you know, anyway, let me see where I'm at here on time. I think I do one more verse. I'll do two more verses here. Yeah, because, if I go into verse 22, I got a bunch of SOP on it. And that'll take up way too much time. I'll go way over 30 minutes here because the sermon today might be a little long. I don't know. It all depends on how the Spirit moves. But, I'm going to put my notes. Like I used to do the sermons, I have a page that you can click because I need to have those notes on the website. So anyway, verses 21 and 22. Oh, no, 20 and 21. Yeah, so 20 and 21. So I'm going to read each one. It says, in which time 20 says, in which time was Moses was born and exceeding fair and nourished up his in his father's house 3 months. And then Exodus 2:2 says, and the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. Okay, and then verse 21 says, and when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him for her own son. And we all know what the cast out means, because Exodus 2 verses 9 and 10 says, and Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, take this child away, because his mom, you know, put him in that basket in the river, and then knowing that the Pharaoh's daughter would see it, see the baby in the basket. So take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages. And the woman took the child and nursed it, and the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And he called his name Moses. And he said, because I drew him out of the water. Now there's new divine intervention. Because now the Lord has a plan with Moses. You know, just like he had a plan with Joseph, now he has another plan with Moses. And Joseph more or less blesses them, you know, because he's obedient, as they are coming into Egypt, and then Moses blesses them with a way to get out of Egypt, because they kind of messed up there. So yeah, next week we'll pick it up to Acts chapter 7, verse 22. And so I guess you're going to hear some music, and then I'll pick up the mic after that. So I'll be back in a minute.